I'm Johnny Cash.
He's back like a bad rash. Legendary broadcaster, Drew Marshall.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling, all down in San Antone.
Folks, you are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're live here in southern Ontario, covering the Toronto area. 6 million people, folks. That's how many they've packed up, packed into this place. And you can get us on your smartphones and the TuneIn app if you put in Joy 1250. We've got a back-to-back journey segments. I don't think I've ever done this before. Journey segments are basically...
We had one show, and it was like a journey show.
Oh, right, right.
And you and I were journeys. Wrecked at the end of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Emotionally
drained.
Journey segment on our show is basically this. It started from the fact that, you know, growing up in the evangelical Jesus church scene thing, the only time I ever heard somebody up on the platform tell their story, it was, my life used to be horrible, then I found Jesus, and now everything's peachy. And so I was brainwashed over 30 years to think that if you find Jesus, everything should be peachy, because that's all I ever heard on the platform. I had a little wake-up call when I read Mike Iaconelli's book, Messy Spirituality. And I said to myself, hold on. We need to showcase people's stories that aren't clean. They're not smooth. They're not perfect.
They're not done yet.
And they're not done. Incredible journey stories. These are what we've had on our show over the last 12 years. And this one, I just kind of happened on. I was, you know, looking at one thing in the online, and you know how what it's like, Daryl, where you click on something and all of a sudden on the side it leads you to something else, and you're here, you're chasing rabbits all over the place. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I found this story. And I'd known a little bit about the Family International. There's some other names for them as well, but I'd taken an alternative religious movements course in college and studied, from a sociological point of view, cults. From the religious point of view, cults. Those are very different definitions of what cults are. Anyway, I came across this lady, Floor Edwards. And Floor and her twin sister, Tamar, never realized that they had grown up in a cult until one day when Floor was about 15. She picked up a copy of 17 magazine. And you know how they have those quizzes? You know, on the front it says, take this quiz for see if you're in love, or I don't know, maybe see if you're gay, or see if you're from an abusive relationship, whatever, right? All these quizzes. This one was called, Did You Grow Up in a Cult? And Floor and her sister began to answer yes to these questions. Here are the questions. Did you grow up in a secluded environment? Were you under the influence of a charismatic leader? Were you coerced to recruit members to your group? Were you taught that the outside world was a forbidden place, and did you feel guilty for wanting to leave? And they answered yes to all of those questions. And they started talking about it and amongst their family, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, please welcome to our show, Floor Edwards. Hi, Floor.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's, it seems like we've been watching the kettle boil. It's just taken so long to finally get here, and now it's here.
It is here.
So I have 932 questions for you that I'd like to get through in the next 10 minutes. Do you mind?
All right. Let's start.
What a story you've had. You've shared it a couple of times here and there. First question I want to ask you is, have you received any feedback from either ex-members or current members of the organization? By the way, what are you actually calling the organization that you grew up in? Are you calling it the Family?
I prefer to call it the Children of God, because I think that name is more... It's more applicable. It sounds more like what it was. Refers more to the early days. The Family was a name that it adopted later on, after us kids came around.
Right.
I just refer to it as the Children of God.
Okay. All right. So have you heard, since you sort of come out with your story, from any current or past Children of God members?
When I wrote the article, I did receive quite a bit of feedback from other fellow members, some who I knew and some who I did not know. It was mostly positive. I think actually pretty much all positive. Some of them said that they were unable to talk about their past.
Was anybody angry with you coming out saying what you've said?
Yes.
And did they sort of just confront you online over email, et cetera, or did they?
Online, yes. I was actually confronted by a family member who wasn't so much upset about me telling the story, but more upset that in her idea, I didn't tell the whole truth. She thought I made it really much prettier than it was, and maybe I didn't expose certain things, but I just told her that it was my experience, and I have to write from my experience, and I'm not here to write my story. I'm not here to write everyone's story because that would be an impossible task.
No, that's right. That's right. But, I mean, that is one of the aspects of your story. You know, when you go to Wikipedia and you look up the Children of God and you read everything that it's, you know, it's about. And look, Wikipedia is not by any means the be-all and end-all of truth. We all know that. Anybody can kind of put stuff on there.
Really? Damn.
Yeah, I hate when that happens. But I have a friend of mine who wrote Nelson's Illustrated Guide to World Religions, and I read his chapter, and even when you read his well-researched chapter, boy, there's some stuff in there that your organization, that your tribe, your people, your friends and family, et cetera, Children of God were accused of. But you're telling me this was, you didn't experience any of that?
Like, what exactly are you talking about?
Well, I guess the two big things that would stand out in my mind are that some of the members were accused of abducting children, and then the whole you know, having sex with people so that they join the family or the Children of God, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I did not firsthand experience either of those. I was never sexually abused. There were instances that I knew of. I never saw sexual abuse happen. I heard of one specific case of a friend of mine, and her father ended up being excommunicated. As far as I think you're referring to the flirty fishing movement.
Yes.
That happened before I was born. So that was banned around the time that I was born. So I did not see any of that.
Tell us about the night that your parents kind of said to you guys in the middle of the night, all right, let's go. The authorities are here, and they packed everyone up, and you guys left. Why did that go down? What exactly happened?
So a lot of times couples in the group would separate, and someone would leave. And the parent who left would come back to try to take their kids back. And this happened quite regularly. We would hear about it. And in that particular instance, one of the girls in our home, her mom had left, and she was coming back to try to get her kids. She had gathered up some officials, social services, and basically we would have raids. I never experienced a full raid, but we would hear about these raids that would happen, and they would, you know, take all the kids away and question them, just like the stories you would see on the news, you know. So in that particular instance, they were after us, and we woke up in the morning and basically heard that they were on their way, and we had to all get up and leave in the early morning, middle of the night. That's what happened. I heard from my dad that there was some sort of miscommunication, and they had thought that my brother, was someone else, and they were possibly coming also to get my brother. But as a child, all I knew was that these officials were coming, and we had to get up, and we had to leave in the middle of the night.
Okay, so the reason I'm diving into these things right off the top is because when people hear about your story and, you know, the big word, the cult, there's the sensationalistic definition of what a cult is, I guess,
right?
Maybe the sociological definition. And, you know, there have been accusations put forth about Children of God. And so I wanted to get all of that right out at the very beginning of this, because what's more important to me, Floor, is your personal journey from the point you discovered what you grew up in.
Right.
Rather than what you actually grew up in. I mean, obviously, it's very interesting to know what you actually grew up in. But I want to know how you process this and how you, quote-unquote, recovered from all of this. And how did life transpire afterwards? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So is there any other Jerry Springer drama we need to get out of the way at the start of this interview?
No, and again, I prefer not to focus on that. And it's not even that I'm trying to avoid anything, because I think I'm pretty honest in when I speak about it and when I write about it. But I've told actually my agent who I'm working with, I don't want it to be a sensational story. I don't want it to be a story about people to, you know, drop their jaws and like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened, you know. I think as a writer, there's no point in writing unless you find meaning in something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every experience, you can find something in it. And that's sort of what I choose to do as a writer.
Let's jump forward then in your story. When you get the magazine, you read the quiz, you go through it, you're answering yes to everything. You did this by yourself first. Then who did you share that quiz with? Or did you and your sister do it together?
No, actually, I think I was always a little bit more of a reader. So, I mean, I found out many things of my life. Quite a few decisions of my life were made through reading magazines. I would just pick up, you know, not just, you know, teen or, you know, pop culture or fashion magazines, but, you know, I'd read, like, you know, literary magazines or, you know, or magazines that had some good information in them. And in this particular instance, I was 15. We would go to the library and pick up magazines from the library, and I found this magazine, and on the front page was, or the cover page, it said, "Did you grow up in a cult? Take this quiz and find out now." And at that point, there was definitely some speculation that something was off. Like, we just knew something had happened, but we never put our minds around it and said, "We grew up in a cult." You know, we were just like, "This is strange. Something's going on." And I'll never forget that moment, how quickly I turned to find that page. Like, once I saw there was a quiz, I mean, I probably just fumbled through those pages looking for this quiz. And I read it, and it was just like this huge light shone on me. I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, I remember running to my sisters. I was just like, my mouth was parched. I was like, my heart was racing. And I was just like, guys, I can't believe this. You guys are not going to believe this. We grew up in a cult. I showed it to them. And that moment was definitely life-changing, because I just realized it. I realized that for the next few days, like, all I could think about was, I grew up in a cult. And that's all that went through my mind.
Right, but at the time, you were 15. Your mom and dad are obviously older and would understand the breadth of the situation a little better. Did you show this article to your parents, and all of a sudden, you know, their light bulb went on in your parents' heads, and they went, oh, wow, I didn't know that. We grew up in a cult.
No. We definitely lashed out at them a little bit. We were like, how dare you? You know, look at what you've done. You know, I mean, I was a teenager. I think teenagers have a right to say certain things, especially, you know, given the circumstances. But, I mean, I was very angry for a while, and we would tell them. I don't know that I ever showed them the article. I've had conversations with them more recently, and they definitely acknowledge that it was a cult. I mean, that doesn't minimize their dedication to the group, and I think, especially my mom, has a really strong faith and belief in God. But I think they understand now, and they realize that it was a cult. And I mean, I could talk more about that, about, you know, how people join and what causes them to stay. You know, the reasons they joined were not the same reasons that they stayed.
Right.
You know. And you sort of get sucked in. You know, they joined it thinking that they were part of a missionary group and they were going to do good things. And, I mean, Father David, you know, they never even met Father David or any of the leaders. And, you know, he told everyone to have as many kids as they possibly could. And by the time they were having, you know, so many kids, they had the support they needed. And there was simply no way they could leave.
How many siblings did you have?
I have 12 siblings.
Okay, now
11. All of us all together.
12 altogether. Now, you know, in the Mormon circles, that's really no big deal, literally, no big deal. You know, the rest of the Western society may look at that and go, wow, that's an awful lot of kids. First of all, are your parents still alive?
They are still alive, and they are still together.
Okay, wow, that's awesome. How do they feel about you talking about this? Would they rather you not?
No, I mean, I've spoken to them. I told them when I had first started writing, you know, and I don't know that they understood exactly what I was doing. You know, you have to understand, we grew up never giving much thought to our future. So as soon as, you know, I hit high school, college, I began to think about what I wanted to do. And the very first thing was, I wanted to be a writer. That was like,
hands down.
It wasn't even a question for me. I was just like, I've got to write. I have to write. And Of course, I also saw my story, and I was like, I need to tell this story. This is, you know, an interesting story, and there's so much material here. And I told them, you know, I'm not sure. A parent never wants to, you know, see their kid go into publishing and writing. It's just, you know, maybe not the most lucrative career decision. But when I published the article last year, I think they started to take it more seriously, and they actually both read it. And I think it actually helped our relationship, you know, for them to see, you know, my perspective.
Okay. Hold on. You're killing me here. Everything you say, I have six more questions to ask. You had said you had grown up never really giving the future much thought, I think that's pretty much what you said. Is that because, you know, the end of the world was right around the corner all the time in your group?
Yeah, so the leader said the world was going to end in 93, and I was born in 81. And so we were constantly on the lookout for the end of the world to come, you know. He had this whole plan about how it was going to happen. This guy produced volumes and volumes, thousands of letters and books, you know, of his teachings and dogma. And so beginning in probably around the time I was born, they were on the lookout for the end. So we grew up as a child, you know, they taught us that 93 was going to be the end. So I never knew I was going to live to be an adult. And I thought a lot about my death, you know, because they taught us that we were going to be martyrs for God. And that was my childhood. So being dumped into the world as a teenager was, needless to say, very traumatic and extremely overwhelming.
So were you guys homeschooled?
Yeah, we were homeschooled, very minimal homeschooling. We learned to read very young. We were forbidden to read, write, or listen to music outside of the group. So we could read, but we could only read the leader's teachings. But we were very good readers. I remember they would teach us to speed read. They did discipline us in certain ways, you know, because we were basically being trained to save the world is what we were taught. Right. So, you know, they made sure that had a lot of exercise, and, you know, we ate as healthy as we could, given that we had no money. And then they started to teach us with these big super workbooks, they called them. So we did get some schooling, you know, but I didn't really have like a traditional education until really college, because high school was sort of a big disaster. But yeah, when I got into college, you know, I really didn't have an education. I went straight to the top of my class in every single subject. Including math, English, everything. You know, my mind is pretty sharp and focused.
But here's the thing. Whenever I know a lot of people, a lot of families who've homeschooled their kids. And some families, after the kids go through grade school, you know, up to grade 8 or whatever, then they go, okay, now you can go to high school. And my goodness, those kids that go to high school that first year, for the vast majority of those kids, I feel horribly sorry for, because they get thrown into the social lion's den. They dress different, they talk different, they interact different, and they just get eaten up. Did that happen to you?
Oh, absolutely. It was a complete disaster. I mean, not only were we homeschooled, I mean, it was almost like we were aliens dropped into the world. I mean, we had no idea what was going on, and we were teenagers. You know, we just wanted to be cool. And as I showed even in that article, like, I got kicked out on my very first day. I had no idea, like, that I was doing anything wrong. And, you know, recently, when I was in college, I had one professor that he really influenced the way I saw things, and he talked about homeschooling. He said it should be unconstitutional to homeschool your kids, and he had a really good point for it, and it really made sense to me when he talked about why, and for all the reasons that you brought up. But he basically said it makes you socially inadequate, and it's 100% true. I think, you know, there has been a lot of talk about how good it is. You know, I remember, I forget his name, but that one speaker, what was his name? James Dobson.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, there's this big, like, craze about it. And I know a lot of people do make the decision to do it, but I 100% agree with you, you know, that socially. And I think school is largely a big social experience, and you need to learn to socialize. Okay. And that's one thing we were not taught to do.
So I know, obviously, because of my background and what I do and having been involved for a lot of years in the Jesus scene in a pretty heavy way, I know a lot of people that I would say, grew up in a cult-like environment, similar to what you did. Not the same, but similar to what you did. In that, did they grow up in a secluded environment? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Jesus kids that grew up, and I hate to admit this, but some of my parenting techniques fall into this category. You know, I wouldn't let my kids watch or read Harry Potter and, you know, just stupid stuff that I now, you know, we all laugh at as a family. But, you know, they couldn't watch The Simpsons because it was, you know, an adult. Well, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to make myself look any more foolish than I am. So, you know, I know that there are a lot of Jesus people that grow up their kids in a secluded environment. Were they under the influence of a charismatic leader? Yeah, whether it be the parents that were the charismatic leaders or the person, the spiritual leader, the church, very charismatic. Were you coerced to recruit members to your group? My goodness, you know, the evangelical Jesus scene, that's what it's all about. Were you taught that the outside world was a forbidden place, and did you feel guilty for wanting to leave? You know, the parallels are very similar, Floor. So what is different about what you grew up in? Because, you know, part of me wants to say, yeah, okay, you grew up in a sheltered, you know, super Jesus environment or whatever. But I don't know. I wouldn't call necessarily what I did or what a lot of other Jesus people do growing up in a cult. I sort of feel like these days like maybe I would call it a cult. But how do you define growing up in what you grew up in as a cult? What makes it stand out so much more?
Well, that's actually a really good question. But, you know, I've done quite a bit of research on this because of writing and partly because I was in school. And I think a big feature or characteristic of a cult is that they try to change people's lifestyles. So you literally eat, breathe, and sleep, you know, this belief system. Whereas, you know, a lot of religions, I know some great people who are like Mormons, and, you know, they are very devoted to their religion, but they have their life outside of their church, you know. And in a cult, you basically, you surrender your entire being, your mind, body, soul, everything to this group. And that's where, you know, even like the whole mind, the thinking, you know, there's this great article, it was published in Harper's recently, what was it called? I can't think of the name right now. But it was about a cult infiltrator, and he would go around to actually some pretty dangerous cults that would, like, commit, you know, murders and things like that. And he would go in and try to get people out. You know, he would help people who were in prison who had been in cults, you know, and they would give him leads on how he could go and, like, you know, get the ringleaders of these groups. I mean, these were religious fanatics, and he would sometimes join the cult just to get the inside scoop on them. This guy was very, very devoted to what he did. And he joined this one, you know, group, and it was, I think it was up in Northern California somewhere. And he just sort of went with what they were doing. And one feature is that they would literally deprive them of protein so they couldn't think. You know, like it was a physiological thing. It was, you know, and for us it was, we didn't really have a lot of money because the world was ending, but, you know, you saw a lot of people who were like malnourished and famished. And I think subconsciously that's what was happening. It was like they had to control us. And I think that element of control is what makes a cult different than, say, of someone who's really devoted to their religion.
Okay, we are on the phone with Floor Edwards. A little background here. Floor was born in Sweden as the fourth of 12 children and grew up in Thailand. Her parents were part of the infamous apocalyptic cult known as the Children of God, which deprived Floor of a, you know, quote-unquote normal education, including the privilege to read or write. And however, she is currently working on a memoir about her unusual childhood, and she's joining us today just to give us a little snapshot of it. I can't wait for this to become published. I think this is going to be just a fantastic story for many people. And I especially think about, again, the any fundamentalist groups, whatever religion they are, but, you know, especially in the evangelical church scene or the evangelical Jesus scene, you know, when we point fingers, when that tribe points fingers at you guys and goes, cult, 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 and then they start doing the comparison, whew, that's a wake-up call. So let me just ask you one thing again about your parents. Like, I just keep thinking about your parents listening to this conversation.
Yeah, I hope they're not. I mean, I don't mind. My parents, their view on it is like, they just want us to be successful. They want, you know, their children to do, you know, what they what can benefit them the most. And for me, like, writing has always been the thing that, you know, I tend to get ahead with in life. Even here, the reason I'm on your show is because I wrote something, and they support me in whatever I do. I don't know, especially if my dad will read my book. I know he read my article, but they support me.
Do they feel like, if I was your father, which is just weird, but anyway, if I was your father, I would feel remorse. I would feel a little bit of shame. I'm not sure how. I don't know what I would feel, but I would just want to do everything I could to make sure that you understood that I am so sorry for having put you through what you went through. Because, and this, now I'm going off some presuppositions here, but I'm assuming that your parents now realize, like you do, that what they were doing was not great. It was cult. They were raising their children in a cult, their family in a cult. And I would just feel horrible about this.
I think to look at it from the outside and from the inside is two very different things. And from the outside, it's easy to say that, but watching my parents and what they've been through and my entire family and what they've been through, I mean, it's been a constant state of survival. You don't always have time to sit around and be remorseful. You know, when you're out trying to just survive and get your basic needs met, remorse is something that you can do when you have the time to be remorseful.
That's
you know? And, I mean, my dad is actually one of my biggest role models. He went, after all this was done, he went back to school and worked really hard, and that's the reason why I actually ended up going back to school. But he led by example. I see sometimes they've never actually expressed remorse, like they've never actually said sorry. But I can see that they, through their actions, they've shown that they're trying to do what's best for us. And even just by taking our whole family out of the group was, I think, their way of putting us first. You know, I don't think they knew what they were doing.
It's the same way as when I think back to me parenting the way I parented when I was involved heavily in the evangelical Jesus scene, and I shake my head. I mean, I have to share this with you just so we're making sense of this. My kids were not allowed to watch Bed Knobs and Broomsticks because it involved witchcraft.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like falling in love with someone and then later realizing that they were the absolute worst person, but you don't regret having that experience.
Yeah. Well, you've just described the relationship that Tim and I have.
Well, I think that's my parents. My experience is different because I had no choice. I was born into it.
Yeah.
Like, I think when it comes to my parents, I've talked to them enough to for them to know, you know, what my stance is, but it's really like rubbing salt on a very old and very tender wound. And I love my parents, you know, I'm still in contact with them, and I'm not the kind of person who wants to point fingers and be like, what? You know, I did that when I was a teenager. That was, you know, those are my teenagers.
But, Floor, how are you different? Like, if you and I met at some spiritual retreat, I don't know, yoga weekend, which I don't think I would go to, but, you know, we hung out for the weekend. How would I pick up that you're different, that you had some crazy cult upbringing?
Probably just through conversation. You know, I mean, I talk to people all the time.
But I'm not getting that now.
By talking to me?
Yeah, like I'm not sitting, you know, the conversations we've had this past week, I am not sitting there going, ooh, I can't wait to get her on. She's nuts, and it's going to sound great on radio. How has growing up in a cult impacted you today? How would somebody else notice something different about you because of the way you grew up? Like, if I grew up in the hood, I would have a certain attitude, I would have a certain trust, you know, there'd be trust issues probably. I don't know, whatever, right? There's these things that come along with what you grew up with. So what you grew up with turned you into what now?
I mean, that's a pretty big question. It's going to be hard for me to answer that. But I think it gave me a certain drive. You know, I mean, it's when you don't have certain things in life, and then later on you discover them. You know, it's given me a drive. I'm not gonna avoid the topic that it has been very, very difficult, and it's definitely been a struggle. I think it's maybe giving me a certain maturity, but it's also giving me a lot of. I think. I definitely question the status quo. I don't take things for what they are because of the different sides that I've seen. And it's not just a religious, you know, topic. I think in everything, I question everything.
Right.
And I think that's why I write, you know, because it's the only way that I sort of can make sense of things.
You see, for me, just to give you a little parallel again, I grew up in the funeral business. I grew up in a funeral home. A byproduct of growing up in what I grew up in means that when someone is 15, 20 minutes late for dinner or for, you know, they're driving in from somewhere for a little social gathering, my mind does go to, oh, maybe they're dead.
Yes.
You growing up with the end of the world being around the corner all the time must have some sort of an impact on you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely. I mean, it's been a somewhat constant state of trauma, like where I think I respond to things a little differently, but I try to take care of it on my own. I try not to let my own insecurities or fears impact those around me. So, but yeah, little things will happen. I'll be like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. I will freak out inside. And I know that that's because in my childhood, it was like, yeah, the end of the world was always around the corner. I also definitely have a really difficult time with authority.
Well, yeah, but I do too, and I think that's completely normal, okay? I'm sorry. There's a preacher man sitting beside me. He's kind of a normal one, otherwise he wouldn't be allowed in the studio. But, he was part of the segment before. Daryl Dash is here, and Daryl's been listening to your story. And I just looked at him and said, Daryl, what do you think? Is there anything you want to ask Floor? Daryl, Floor, Daryl.
Floor, good to hear your story. As a preacher, is there anything you would say to...
Great question.
I haven't even finished it yet.
No, I know where you're going. Great question.
Is there anything you would say to me about... obviously, anything even healthy can become really unbalanced really quickly. So
right.
Is there anything you would say to me that would be, or to evangelicals about, be careful of this. Don't slip into unhealthy patterns here.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I took away from the very get-go, like I must have been a teenager and I processed all of this, you know, which I still have to constantly process, but the big bulk of this, like, insane, like, oh my God, this just happened, what's going on? I realized right away that I think one of the biggest problems with religion is trying to force your agenda on other people. And I think spirituality or every individual's experience of God should be their own sacred secret. And I'm even cautious to talk about my own spirituality, which people ask me about all the time, and it's something that I have cultivated. But because of my own experience, because of the dark side that I've seen, and I have seen religion in one of its most unbalanced states, I'm very careful about not pushing my agenda on other people. You know, I think everyone's experience of the sacred, the divine God should be their own.
But that's a pastor's job, week in and week out, is to not push, but to teach, others about, you know, how to lean forward or lean into this God that the tribe believes in.
So you're saying that is their job?
Yeah, that is, I guess, really part of the job description, isn't it, Daryl?
Yeah, I think so. Not to coerce, though.
I think there's a difference between sharing your experience and pushing an agenda on someone, you know? And I think a big, big kind of fault of the children of God was this idea that you know, Father David's experience needed to be everyone's experience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, granted, he had some serious demons he was working out, you know, and somehow he was able to gather this group of people. I mean, they were a very active group. So,
Floor, if you were sitting in a church today, should you ever darken the doors of a church, first of all, and you heard
I've actually been wanting to go, but not so much to convert, but just to hear what's being said.
Right, but you would listen to a preacher teach, tell, explain, exhort, encourage, steer, direct, and through your ears, that might sound like manipulation or pushing an agenda.
Well, that goes back to what I said about questioning everything. Like, don't just take something for what it is. Question everything. I mean, it's. I think our job as human beings to filter what we hear and not just take it for what someone says. It's so easy. I think that's when people do join cults, I think there is this, they give their power away,
yes.
You know, and it's easy to have someone else think for you and decide for you. It's very difficult to make your own decisions, you know, as big decisions when you have to really listen to what's inside. That's hard, and that's what I've done, you know. But
Well, here's the thing I am dying to know, because, you know, I didn't want to talk about this before when we were chatting this week, but, you know, look, over the 12 years, I've interviewed a lot of people about their spiritual journeys, and people who have been involved in a religious order of some sort, in a tribe of some sort, and it didn't go well for them. Matter of fact, it might have been horrible. They jump ship and go to a different tribe, a different belief system or whatever. But more often than not, they chuck out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. So what have you done with God? And growing up in the children of God, there was a Jesus element. So what have you done with Jesus?
You know, I think it's funny that you say throw out the baby with the bathwater, because that's actually one of my sister and I, when we would have these conversations that I sort of talked about last week with you, was we would literally say, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, we were just like, I think our childhood, there was so much richness to it, aside from all the darkness to it, that we wanted to be able to get something. And we both did in our own way. For her, she's on her own thing. And for me, a lot of it came down to writing. You know, I think everything can be a spiritual practice. You know, I mean, I think it was maybe Mother Teresa or I forget who, but they said there's two ways to see the world. Everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle. And I think that's very similar to spirituality. Like, either everything's spiritual or nothing's spiritual. You know, it's not like there's this one entity outside of yourself and that's what spirituality is. So I think everyone interprets spirituality different. I'm very much a person of action. I find kind of that spiritual place through action, through doing things, you know, through a moving sort of meditation. My sister's is different, you know, we're identical twins. And I mean, for me also, it came down to learning. I think I became very interested in discovering more, you know, and learning more about everything.
This is a question I've been told never to ask a woman, but here we go. How old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay.
I just turned 33.
Happy birthday. That's why I asked. I wanted to say happy birthday. No, that's not why I asked. I guess I asked this because your story, your persona, everything about you just leads me to think that, I'd love to just keep track of where your spiritual journey goes. I think people that have experienced, as you just said, the kind of depth and light and substance that you experienced that also came along with darkness, I still think there's something really beautiful about the good side of things that you experienced. I'm missing that.
Yeah.
And I'm just completely filled with darkness, I guess.
You have to wait for the book.
Oh, well done. Your publicist will love you. Well done. Well, next time I head down to L.A., I look forward to grabbing a coffee with you and chatting more.
Absolutely. That sounds great.
Floor, thank you so, so much for sharing some of your guts with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Take care.
Follow me on Twitter.
Okay. Folks, Floor Edwards on The Drew Marshall Show.
Believe in things that you don't understand and you suffer.
It's hard to find quality guest speakers these days. If they're interesting, they're usually expensive. And if they're cheap, they're usually boring. Well, here's someone who's both expensive and boring. Drew Marshall is a high school dropout who tried to become a pro football player but didn't make it. He then tried to become a firefighter and didn't make it. Now he's trying to become a stand-up comic. Good luck with that, Mr. Marshall. But if you're looking for someone who's unpredictable, incredibly honest, provocative, genuine, then we've got the right guy. Everyone seems to be an expert on something these days. Why not book someone who's an expert on nothing, except how to be brutally honest about yourself and your faith? To book Drew Marshall as your guest speaker, go to drewmarshall.ca.